This is F1 Debrief, like a spaceship painted black and gold. Coming up this week, we discuss pit stops aplenty, terribly bad parking, and a game of marbles. I think you should probably enjoy this podcast now, because we can't promise that the content will still be the same after you've been to sleep.
Right, the results may change.
Yes.
Results may vary in the morning.
It's happened twice so far this season.
Twice in two races.
It could happen some more.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for school kids in Malaysia as Tony Fernandez took his Lotus drivers, Jarno Trulli and Heikki Kovalainen, to visit his old school. The kids got to meet the drivers, ask questions, get autographs, and Tony fed them with some Dream the Impossible Dream speeches.
Dream the Impossible Dream?
Yeah, you know, like the song.
Isn't that Honda?
It was a Honda advert.
Got the wrong team.
Yeah. It's been a bad week for Claire Williams.
Oh, as shocking
this
news.
Is breaking news.
This is the news that rocks the Formula One world. I wish you'd warned me this was coming up. I would have sat down in preparation.
Red Bull Racing team manager Jonathan Wheatley blocked her into a car parking space on Friday as she was parked in his space by accident.
It's all kicking off the track.
It is. I'm a bit worried that you're all sniggering about girls parking and stuff.
Yes, women parking, eh? They can't read the sign. The sign must be on the wall.
Yeah.
Can't read.
Anyway. It's been a good week for both exercise and charity, as UBS and Investment Bank are donating $50 to the Make-A-Wish Foundation for each lap in 2011, uploaded to runthattrack.info. This is where media types run each circuit and share their lap times.
I love this idea. I loved it last year. I love it even more now.
Five Lives' Natalie Pinkham did her first track run this weekend after being encouraged by Anthony Davidson. And I think so far they've raised over $3,000.
That's UBS. They also sponsor the Chinese Grand Prix.
Ah.
So it's that company. It's fantastic news. I'm so pleased that they've got behind it. I'd love to see what they can make before the end of the year.
It's been a bad week for Shattered Illusions as Williams discovered a 7-inch spider behind one of their workbenches. No one wanted to go near it, as
Don't
you can imagine.
Them.
7 inches. Most wary was Nigel Hope. Now, he was the man who helped put Heikki's fire out in Singapore and helped catch Nico Rosberg's stray wheel in Turkey last year.
But he's scared of a spider.
He's a hard man. He's scared of spiders. But then again, everyone has to have their kryptonite, don't they?
Is that okay? That's what it is.
Yeah.
He can catch a flying wheel. He can put out a flaming car. He can't look at that spider under the bench.
Qualifying.
Once again, there didn't seem to be much news until the Grand Prix weekend got underway.
It was a quiet week unless you were looking for news, I
think. It's weird because for the past couple of years, the beginning of the season has been dominated by all kinds of controversies. And this year is so quiet, I don't know what to do with myself.
People are just getting on with the business of racing.
They are. And they did get on with it.
They did.
In free practice, it wasn't that exciting, but lots of cars seemed to fall apart.
I only caught the first of three free practice sessions, but it seemed to be the most exciting one.
Picked the right one.
Nick Heidfeld had a bizarre problem with his front wheel. It locked. I think after he put it in a very fast lap, he found his front right locked, and he had to coast back to the garage after he had a problem with that brake. And then later in the session, his teammate Vitaly, his car, his front suspension destroyed itself of its own accord. And then almost just before the session came to a close, I think Virgin had a similar problem where their front suspension just collapsed on them. And pitched Jerome off track. So there was a lot of worried faces, I think, after FP1, as people were beginning to question whether or not there was an issue with the tyres, and whether or not it seemed like there were so many similar problems, it couldn't be a fluke.
No, and it wasn't a fluke that the two Renaults had an issue, but I guess the similarity with the Virgin must have just been a coincidence.
It was.
I think Renault looked into it afterwards and they decided it was a problem with them. With the batch in the machining process or whatever.
It was a bad start to the weekend.
Yeah.
Not how you want your Friday to get going. It was almost as bad as Lotus's Friday free practice one from last race in Australia. It was like, what could go wrong went wrong.
Yeah, I guess so. But we didn't really see much else of free practice and it doesn't sound like we missed much. So on to qualifying, which was a bit more exciting.
It was. I enjoyed this qualifying. Qualifying is back on form. In 2011. I'm loving it. Did you enjoy it?
I did. Obviously, I was fact boxing it, covering it from all angles, so I wasn't necessarily sitting back and enjoying every moment.
It built up nicely. First, got to be said, after the first race of the year, HRT through.
Finally, yes.
Inside the 107% rule, both cars, well done to those. I'm quite impressed. I didn't have too much hope myself that they would make that. I wasn't entirely expecting them to turn up in some cases. But people were telling us that the nose had passed the crash test. They were going to use it, and once they had it in use, their days would get better, and they did.
They just needed a minute to sort themselves out, didn't they?
Yes.
Or and more than a minute.
They managed to get some practice laps in, and they did well in qualifying, so hats off to the people.
Yeah, and I mean, at least one of the cars was, you know, well enough inside. It wasn't like scraping through just about.
Not at all. Lietzi did very well. He was troubling the virgins at points.
At the other end, though, it was much closer at the top. In Australia, we saw Vettel streaking away with pole position, and we all thought it was, the same was going to happen again.
It's like it's felt like it was going to be a dominating season. And the guy got pole, so you can't say that, you know, thus far it hasn't been a Red Bull whitewash, but it was very close.
I mean, Hamilton looked like he had it for most of the final session until Vettel got it right at the last minute.
Yes, it was Hamilton's error, actually, I think, in the last corner that gave it to Vettel.
It was much more exciting to see that it could have been anyone's rather than, oh, it's so obviously going
to
be Vettel.
There was four people in it right up to the very, very last moments. None of those four people, though, included either Ferrari drivers, who had a torrid, torrid qualifying. That car just, I don't know whether in winter testing they didn't get to do qualifying runs, but they just don't seem to be able to bring out a very fast lap when they need to do it.
No, because in the race, they looked a bit better.
Fine in the race. Really good. Great race pace, that car. It just cannot... It has nothing for qualifying. For the second race in a row, it really have nothing to show. They've got, you know, they put the foot down and the car just doesn't deliver when they need it to.
Williams were not so good in qualifying. Maldonado, he was the first one knocked out. Not the first one knocked out. The big name, so to speak.
The big name
out,
to drop.
Yeah, in Q1. Along with all the not-so-new teams. And Barrichello was somewhere in the midfield as well. I thought they were going to have more than what they have.
They showed promise in testing, and they have neither reliability nor speed. And it's not looking good for them. Second race in a row, double DNF. We'll get to that in a bit, but it's not going well for Williams.
No.
Such high hopes as well.
And the other surprise, I suppose, was that Schumacher was the one knocked out of the top 10.
Surprise to whom?
I don't know. Mercedes looked like they were doing better.
Mercedes keeps saying they're doing better, but as yet they haven't shown that they're doing better. And it does look like they've fallen off the pace from last year. Last year they ended the season well, yet they've got very little to offer at the beginning of this year.
And the only other thing of note, of course, is that Heidfeld beat Petrov.
And that makes you sad.
Well, I don't know. It's
disappointing, the way it was supposed to be. You know that the last race was an anomaly.
Yeah.
And Heidfeld just went, I don't know what was wrong with the guy. Maybe it was first day nerves or something. He finally justified, I think, Renault's decision to bring him in. And Nick has never been known for being a great qualifier. But I think he did well in that Renault.
It confuses me that his name is Quick Nick, when he never has stood out as
Consistent
quick.
Consistent Nick would be better.
Not quite as catchy, I suppose.
That's where it's fallen down.
Mm. That was it for qualifying, really. It turns out that the top five this race were the same top five that qualified in that order in Australia, with Vettel on pole and everything. But I think this weekend it was a lot more interesting.
Do you think that it was a Saturday morning well spent for you? Do you recommend qualifying?
Well, yeah, it was good. It was a bit early, but, you know, that's just the way it goes. The race was just as early.
Yes, let's talk about the race.
Okay. The race. Just slightly prior to the race, on the installation lap, the formation lap, whatever it's called, Weber's Kurz gave out
that
before he'd
last
even started.
Long. So, Red Bull ran without Kurz in Australia.
Mm.
They managed to bring it to Malaysia. And it didn't. It survived qualifying.
Yeah,
it's the best compliment we can pay the Red Bull Kurz system.
Yeah, I think Weber's never came back, did it?
No,
I'm not sure.
He never
about
saw
that.
Hide nor hair of anything to do with Kurz for the entire of Sunday.
And Vettel said his was coming and going, so you just can't rely on it.
Yes, I mean, you could almost hear the incredulation in Vettel's voice on the radio when he said, "Do not use Kurz." Are you sure I can use Kurz? Don't use the Kurz button. Seriously, don't press that button. Are you sure?
Can what
you
was just that confirm? Message again?
No one in Red Bull has much love for Kurz, but you saw at the start of the race, when Webber didn't have it, he was swamped very quickly.
It does make a difference.
It's essential.
Vettel did have it and Webber didn't, and everyone went past Webber. He went from, what was it, like fourth down to 10th or something.
I have to admit to being secretly happy that Newey is unhappy.
Right.
Because he's got it all his own way at the moment. He's got the aero regs the way he wants. He's got the flexi bendy wobbly wing doing what he wants it to do. He's got the fastest car on the grid, but they're still making him run the curves that he doesn't want to run.
Yeah.
And that makes me happy. Because he's not going to have the season all his own way, and that's going to be Red Bull's problem this year, I think, is that is their one area of unreliability, and it may punish them at some point. It's certainly punished Webber. I think considering the start he had, Webber did well to save his day. But you do wonder whether or not there's more to come from a Dickey curse system.
It does seem like in that car, the start is the most important thing because they've got the pace to hold people off and things like that. But the start is really key. And I think we discussed that last time, didn't we? The possibility of them fixing some kind of start-only curse.
Yes. The thing is, we saw Webber having to fight his way through the field, but as yet, Vettel's had it easy out front. The guy's not been troubled. He's had to make a couple of passes due to strategy and where the pit stops have left him. But really, he's not had to do much from second. You know, I'd like to see what he can do from second place in that car, and whether or not when he has to push it, whether or not it falls to pieces. That will be the test.
So the race began, and it was a clean opening lap, wasn't it?
Amazing driving.
Nothing, no incidents, nothing. No bodywork spraying anywhere.
There were some close calls. I think both Renault drivers did very well.
Yeah.
I know that Vettel after the race said he was surprised to see Heidfeld there. And then Heidfeld after the race said he was surprised to see Petrov there. So everybody was hugely surprised by what Renault did. I don't know how they've managed to make such a good start system, but that's two races in a row that they've done well. And two races in a row, it's put them on the podium. So that has been very key to the start of their season, having a great start in those cars. Exceptional driving throughout the field. I think you can't complain at anyone. Nobody took anybody off. Nobody was at fault. It was very nice, very clean.
Even with cars flying forward like that and Webber going backwards, even trying to navigate all that, it was still very clean. It was impressive. The pit stops came really early after only about 11 laps, and it was Webber who came in first. But because he came in so early, that meant that he was really on a four-stop strategy.
Mm.
Four stops.
Four. Yes, it's been a while, and I think we had three or four drivers all doing four-stop stints intentionally. I mean, I think Webber's was planned. They made this decision before that he was working his tyres too hard. They weren't going to last as long as they were for Vettel, and they had a four-stop backup plan, and they executed that, you would say, to perfection. I mean, as I just said, the guy managed to save his day, and they meant to do a four-stop race, and that's what they did.
Hmm.
Did you keep up with it?
Well, no. I mean, it was very... It was just so confusing because you have... I mean, Pirelli said, from the beginning, they said, we were asked to make the tyres have more pit stops. We may see three and four pit stop races. And I thought, nah, that will never happen. And then we had Australia, which it really didn't happen. We saw Sauber one stopping, and I thought, oh, they were all just over-exaggerating.
As Formula One tends to do, we're going to cut the aero by 50% and end up cutting it by 5%, etc. The tyres aren't going to last, you know, five laps, and they end up lasting the whole race. But...
it really happened. Four stops. I was amazed. But it is really hard to see, to follow.
I like it. This is the thing I've been missing since they took away refueling. I like cars being out of sequence, not having a clear picture of the race entirely, because people are going to pit at different places and it doesn't quite shake out until the final laps. I like things being out of order. I like people doing things differently. I like it when the safety car comes in and it messes up some strategies and some people jump up in it. I like the confusion, and I just think more pit stops brings something back to Formula One that was definitely missing last year.
Yeah, I mean, I can sort of see that, but the thing is, they're empty pit stops. They come in, they go out, nothing has changed, nothing has happened. I mean,
they're very swift.
Yeah, we did see a little bit of cars being faster once they had the new tyres on, but that only lasted for one lap, so it didn't make any difference. They might as well not bother stopping. If you're going to stop, you might as well make it worth your while and put some fuel in.
That's a fair point. The reason, I mean, the tyres didn't give a significant advantage, you're right, after they were put on new tyres, I think maybe helped Sutil I saw put in a purple sector once, and that was the only guy I really saw make up any time on new tyres.
I think it happened to Webber as well, but yeah.
However,
he did stop four times, so it was bound to improve at some point.
If you didn't stop, your tyres would disappear from under you, and you wouldn't be able to continue. So they have to come in when the tyres have given up. Otherwise the times will just fall off and they will get slower and slower and slower. What you're seeing, I think, is that some drivers are managing their tyres better, so their times aren't falling off, and when you put the new tyres on, your times aren't really making up that much of a difference, which is sort of something we were promised with these tyres. New rubber would give a pace advantage, so you come in and you lose time coming in, but you're faster coming out and you can make up the difference. We were promised that, and that isn't happening, I will grant you.
It doesn't seem to me to be any different from last year, where it was just stops for no reason, didn't make any difference to the running order, really. It seems to be the same this year, it's just that there are more of them.
Yes.
I mean, we've got all the other stuff helping overtaking, so I'm not saying the racing is like last year. But in terms of pit stops, they just seem to be the same thing. There are just more of them. The only difference, I think, that I've seen is, A, it really emphasises how bad Hamilton is on his tyres, and also emphasises how good Sauber are. That's the only thing I think it highlights.
Was it 18 laps they managed with their first set of softs?
Yeah.
Both Sauber drivers? Amazing.
I think they were the last to come
management.
In.
I mean, they still stopped three times. Kobe actually stopped three times in the end. So they're not a world away from everybody else. But there is a difference. If it was Weber who stopped on 11 and Perez and Kobe actually came in on 18. So that there is a difference. And that might play into their hands at certain races, but not this one.
No, I mean, it did at the last one until they were disqualified.
And they got points this race.
Yeah.
I feel slightly vindicated for Sauber, who managed to get some points, even though poor Perez was at the mercy of a falling apart Toro Rosso.
Yeah.
For the second time.
And that Toro Rosso just doesn't want to stay together.
We didn't talk about it, but Buemi fell to pieces in qualifying. That brought out the red flag.
He didn't.
Well, his weekend fell to pieces.
Yeah.
And his engine cover fell off the side pod. And then his car fell to pieces in the race, and that took out
a
Perez.
Well, we don't know, but that's what Perez says, that a piece of Toro Rosso hit his car and basically stopped him.
Terrible.
Out on track.
Terrible day. I don't know what's going on with the people who are putting together Toro Rosso's car. And then Buemi went and got himself a drive-through for speeding in the pit lane. We haven't seen that for a long time.
But it wasn't just a drive-through. It was a 10-second stop and go or something.
Yes.
It seemed really quite harsh.
In the past, it used to be a drive-through, didn't it? Or am I forgetting? Am I going senile? I don't know. Maybe it was always a stop and go. It did seem, for speeding in the pit lane, it's a fine during practice sessions. And then it's a stop and go in the race.
The other thing to say about tyres is that, particularly at this race, there just seemed to be bits of rubber strewn all over the track off the racing line. So if those tyres are meant to help in the overtaking business, actually all they're doing is making that racing line
dirty,
so much more important.
Yes, as happened in Canada, there is one racing line in Canada and you can't go off track or you end up in the wall. There is a man listening to this podcast now called Stephen Roy who will be yelling at us saying, I told you this over winter. He did mention it in December, I think. That is a side effect of it, and you have to balance it. You have to have the tyres that degrade will cause marbles.
I mean,
so what can you do?
Particularly because Sepang is like the widest track that has ever existed.
Yes,
but
it
wasn't.
This tiny, tiny little thread of a racing line at the end of it. Did you like the three... abreast passing of Michael Schumacher?
Well, yeah, it was good.
Come on.
No, it was good, but then he just dived into the pit lane and ruined it. Ruined all our fun.
He didn't end up at the back of three, which is a shame. But well, he did, because he went in the pits, but not as a result.
I think he might have been planning that anyway.
Yes, it was I like three aside. It doesn't happen that often.
Nope.
Nobody knocked anybody off, which was great driving from all concerned.
You know, I briefly mentioned Hamilton struggling on his tyres. I think we might have cause for a jingle right about now.
What would that jingle be?
It might be Ted News.
Ted News.
In his post-race roundup, Ted Talks, I think people are calling it.
Ted Talks.
he said that, because Hamilton was on for a three-stop strategy, or so we believed, but just a few laps from the end, he came in and had to change his tyres because his lap times were dropping off quite dramatically. And Ted says that it was all Hamilton's idea. He called it. He said he needed to come in, and the team were quite adamantly against it, but they couldn't argue it too much because he's just going to come in anyway.
They thought the guy's tyres would last.
Yeah. And they didn't. Or he didn't think they would.
Maybe he was unhappy. He's the driver. He should know. And what can you say? I don't want to jump on that Hamilton doesn't know how to manage his tyres bandwagon. I think the guy was just in a really bad mood. That's my guess.
He didn't look happy afterwards.
Maybe the tyres were giving away. Maybe Jensen did manage them better. But the weaving incident had already happened, and I think he probably thought he might be in a bit of trouble. Alonso had hit him, and he was probably worried that his tyres might be suffering from a puncture. And maybe he thought he'd just end up in the wall if he didn't get it sorted. He just didn't seem happy at McLaren this weekend. I don't know why I think that. A lot of things he was saying, he was talking up his chances of driving with Vettel at Red Bull as the weekend got going.
That's nonsense.
Wasn't it? What happened?
Well, someone said, oh, I wonder what it'd be like. And then it was like, would Vettel be able to work with him? And then he was like, yeah, I'd be able to work with Vettel. Like, whatever. There isn't an actual rumour.
I don't know. I just think I get the impression that maybe he's not too happy where he is right now.
It would be quite amazing if Button manages to unseat him as McLaren's golden boy.
Interesting. Well, see, he's Whitmarsh's favourite.
You'd never have put money on that, would
you? Well, no, I didn't have money on him going there in the first place. There's no way I'm going to ever make that money back. That's gone and forgotten about.
He wasn't happy after the race. He looked terribly frustrated when they interviewed him on the BBC. And then, after that, just to make his day even better, they gave him a penalty.
Just to make my day even worse.
Well, yeah.
It's all about me, of course.
Both Hamilton and Alonso got 20-second post-race penalties. And, I mean, perhaps I wasn't paying attention enough, but they just seemed to come out of nowhere.
Mm.
I mean, Alonso was trying to overtake Hamilton and closed up too close behind him.
Yes.
And knocked off his front wing.
Yes.
So he had to go into the pits and get a new front wing.
Right, that was punishment and enough.
It was like in the middle of the race.
Yeah.
Nothing, no word, nothing.
He also didn't damage, he caused no significant damage to Lewis Hamilton. I think he hit the rear wing, maybe. And he didn't impede him in any way.
Hamilton wasn't complaining.
Not at all. No, exactly. I don't think he wasn't on the radio screaming that Alonso should be called over for that. This is what I don't. There's so much wrong with this. I don't know where to begin. But to cast your mind back to Malaysia 2010, and Lewis Hamilton was weaving down the main straight, trying to prevent Vitaly Petrov from overtaking him. Lewis Hamilton claimed he was trying to break the toe and received a black and white flag for his troubles.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I said that was weaving. Other people said it was breaking the toe. I still think it was weaving. It was blatant.
That's what breaking the toe is, isn't it?
Well, okay, but it was blatantly moving across the track several times. And I thought he should have got a stronger penalty than a black and white flag that seemed to come out of nowhere. But I accept that flag set a precedent. So why, at the same track a year later, performing almost the same move, does he not get another black and white flag? Why is he now getting a penalty? Because if anything, there was less weaving this year than last year. Vettel this year was weaving on the main straight at the start. It all seems like it seems like inconsistent penalties. It's inconsistent amongst the field this year. It's inconsistent to what happened last year. Arguably, Lewis should probably know better because the same thing happened last year and he was at the same place and he was defending in a similar style. So maybe there's a cause for complaint there. However, nothing in my mind justifies Alonso's penalty.
No,
I've watched it so many times. I cannot fathom what he did wrong.
Alonso, and I mean, we're all saying he was penalised enough or whatever. They say it was an avoidable accident. And so if it was, why didn't they do it in the race?
What is an avoidable accident?
Last year, they did a lot of, we'll investigate this after the race.
Yes, where was that?
Where was that?
Exactly.
That would have been something, at least we'd know.
And fail from the stewards.
Likewise with Hamilton. I'm not sure where in the race the weaving incident was.
It was on the main straight. That happened.
Towards the end of the race?
It was literally just before Alonso hit him. It was like the two.
So that's also in the middle of the race.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't they announce they're looking into things? Then we'd know that when we go to sleep, it could have changed. It's just knowledge.
For the second time in two races, we've gone to bed after a Formula One race. We have woken up and the results have changed. I can't believe I moaned about this on the last show. I can't believe the FIA didn't listen and didn't act. I can't believe I'm going to have to do it again.
No, you don't have to moan again. People can just go and listen to the last show.
Good,
that's fine.
God!
But all it gets me is that the only excuse for not saying we're going to investigate something is that it happened so close to the end of the race. But
if there was a lot going on, you could excuse them. If there was like five or six incidents, maybe.
But just say, we're going to look into it. That's all I need to know.
Yes. Please flag it so that it's something we can keep an eye on. Because, I mean, I watched the entire of the BBC forum, or pretty much to the end of it before I went to sleep. It wasn't like the checker flag fell and I just passed out in a coma.
It does happen.
It has happened. There was a post-race forum on the BBC, which we watched for about 45 minutes, and there was no mention of it. there were some rumors that Alonso had gone to see the stewards, but it could have been for, you know, he could have been complaining. It could have been for nothing. I just cannot believe that Formula One can do it again.
It's just weird.
It's not weird. It's awful. It genuinely is unacceptable. And I do not know why people put up with this. I really don't. Especially as Alonso was, I still, to the life of me, can somebody please explain what that was about? If you crash into somebody, you don't impede them and you lose your own wing and have to pit. There is your penalty right there, coming into the pit lane to get a new nose change. It's just beyond me. It makes me a bit angry.
Changing the subject to things that make me a bit angry, Petrov.
Petrov makes you angry?
No, but he didn't really finish the race.
He did finish the car.
Yeah.
He finished the steering, he finished the front axle.
He totaled the car.
Yeah. That's
see what I did there? It was a joke.
That was clever. I missed that. I was already on to the next thing.
Yeah. He like ran a bit wide and the car was airborne, flying through the air. He hit a bomb.
Amazing. What an amazing shot.
Yeah.
I'm glad the camera caught that.
He went flying through the air, came down with a heck of a bump. Everyone's saying he's going to have a really bad back. But he hasn't said so. But I think he's made of stronger stuff than that, you know?
I see. Again, I don't know where the blame lies for this one because there is a pre-race inspection by all drivers and they get to look at the bumps and the off-track bits and they can see what the curbs are like and stuff. And he possibly should have known that there was a drain there. Arguably, he should have not come on at such an extreme angle or so fast. There was maybe some lack of experience in his actions there. But, you know, he paid for them.
It just means that Heidfeld finished ahead of him, and that's not fair.
On the podium.
Yeah.
Well impressed.
That is good. The only thing that is wrong with Heidfeld having this podium is that it is the week they chose to have gold overalls. They normally have black with a bit of gold. This time it was gold with a bit of black.
Mm.
I'm not a fan of that.
To keep the sun off, I think. There wasn't much sun to keep off today.
No.
Luckily, we didn't have rain. Rain would have really mixed it up, I think.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I was already confused with the tyres. I got very confused when they kept on showing these graphics with all the, whether they're pressing curves or they're not pressing curves, whether your wing is open and some wings were stuck closed and who knows what was going on. I couldn't follow it at all.
So when you say you can't follow it, do you think that Formula One is now too confusing?
Well.
Or are you just a bit simple?
People will say I'm stupid. They do say things like that. It's fine. I don't mind. I'll take that on the chin.
Okay, but is too much gone? You've now got curves, you've now got DRS, and you've got these
short-life tyres. I do find it a lot to try and follow. I mean, like I said, I was fact-boxing, so I was live-blogging everything, and I can write what I see, but to try and analyse it and know what's going on enough to calculate everything and find out who's where and everything, it is a lot. It's a lot of information to take in, and I just don't think I can do it.
See, the only thing I ask of Formula One is to not be boring. Don't make me think I'd rather be doing something else. Don't make me think that there must be something better I can be doing in my life that's more entertaining and more enjoyable and more fun. And with all that's going on, I can't claim to have ever been bored. Right the way to the last lap, it was all go. It was hectic. It was wall-to-wall interest, excitement, and action. Now, it's not, a lot of people will argue that it's fake and it's not true racing. And they are probably right, but I don't care. I just care that I'm not falling asleep. And there was nowhere falling asleep at that race, even if you didn't know exactly what was going on at any given time. There was no rain. There was no major smashes to keep you entertained. There was no safety car. So it was all, you know, it was all on-track action. Nothing really happened in the pits of any note. It was, everything was going on track. Cars were passing and repassing and underpassing and undercutting and retaking. Live timing seriously needs a rethink.
Yeah, it kept getting stuck.
It can't keep up. It generally, you
it's like me.
It's fine. When you've got cars running in procession, live timing is actually an adequate solution as it currently is, because most of the time when a car goes into one section, it's, you know, it
comes out the other
end in the same position. With the DRS, it's changed three times in that period.
It's definitely entertaining and I prefer it infinitely to last year. I don't feel like taking a whole year off of Formula One like we did before. But it's just, I think what it is in particular is the number of pit stops, just the volume of them.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how many were there? 50?
There were like 60 or so pit stops today.
69?
People diving in and out of the pit lane all over the place. So that in itself is just quite a lot of information to take in.
You worry about the safety of the pit lane with that many stops as well.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And also, it's quite hard to distinguish. So you're watching someone with their DRS-ness And then it's like, are they overtaking because of the wing? Are they overtaking because they've got curves left? Why are they overtaking? Mm-hmm. And that's what it is.
Yes.
Because I don't want to just be like, oh, they're overtaking and that's fine. Because sometimes it looked like it was really easy and they got past and you couldn't really figure out why. Was it because they pressed 3,000 different buttons?
Yes. I mean, again, I'm still waiting to see what happens to DRS, but the best racing on track this morning was Alonso versus Hamilton. And Alonso was following and his DRS had failed.
Mm.
And that gave us the best racing of the afternoon. If his DRS had been fine, there wouldn't have been any weaving. There wouldn't have been that accident. It would have just been a straight pass and that would have been the end of it. He would have sailed off into the distance. So at the moment, I still am not convinced by DRS.
No. I also find it quite tricky because it takes me half a race to learn the different bits of the track to yes. figure out where we are on track. And because it's only at this specific bit and you have to, the activation zone is there and then the you're only allowed to press it from there to there and all that, it takes me a while to figure out when you are actually allowed to use it.
Yeah.
Although it's better in something at the moment because it's on the home straight and that's quite obvious.
Mm. It would help if the camera pointed at it. Mm. If there was some kind of onboard shot you could see. The graphics, you're right, need improving. It's not entirely clear. There's a light for DRS enabled and there's another light for DRS has been pressed. But that doesn't mean... The problem is I noticed that Alonso's was being pressed, but that just meant he was pressing the button.
It wasn't actually working.
It wasn't doing anything to the rear wing, but that's where the graphics are failing. So I was in the comments saying that Alonso is definitely using his DRS because I could see him pressing the button. And then Ted Kravitz come on and say, well, I've just watched him go past and it's not moving. And I'm believing the graphics, but they're not telling me what's actually happening.
No.
But there's so much more that can be done in that area.
Yeah, because I'm not offended by the ideas. Like you say, a lot of people say it's fake and, well, that's what you've got to do until they can figure out the fundamental problems. So I'm not offended by the ideas at all. It's just a lot of information bombarded all at once. We didn't get broken into this gently at all. It's suddenly there was DRS, there was curves, there was a change of tyres. It's a lot to take in.
It is. Roll on Monaco, because that's not going to be chaos at all.
Let's have a couple of voicemails. Other people have opinions on the KERS and the DRS aside from us, you know. First up, we have Gavin, and he has some feedback on the race he saw today.
Hello, Christine and Mr. C. It's Gavin here. Just want to give my thoughts on the Malaysian Grand Prix. Thought it was a bit of a confusing race. It was very much like going down to the local supermarket and watching the drivers driving in and out the car park. There was so many pit stops, it was very hard to follow what was happening. I think, to be honest, there was too many pit stops, really. It sort of took away from the entertainment of the race and made it difficult to follow. But really, I'm also calling about the penalties retrospectively added to Hamilton and Alonso's races. It was good to see them fighting on the track. Maybe Hamilton did weave, but it didn't look too bad. And Alonso hitting him was really a racing incident. I mean, it's not really one you can penalise much for, especially in Alonso's case, because having to have to change his wing, he already got probably a 20-second penalty as it was. So it seems a little silly. And also, it doesn't really change much. I mean, they both had bad races anyway. They probably just want to scratch those off the list.
I agree with Gavin. I'll tell you what, the 20-second penalty for Alonso was almost entirely pointless. Maybe there should be a rule that says if we apply a penalty and it doesn't change anything, don't bother mentioning it. Because if you've got a 20-second penalty and you stay in the same place, it literally makes... Does Alonso care? Do you think Alonso is even slightly bothered that he got that penalty? No, because he stays exactly where he is. He doesn't give a damn.
Gavin went on to give an example of a Grand Am race where the cars were found to be illegal after the event. And because of the way the regulations are formed, they don't change race results. So illegal cars, that race result stands even though they were illegal. And he just wonders whether that is fair or not.
I think we talked about this last week, which is if an infringement has happened during the race and the stewards pick up on that infringement that's occurred during the race, then there has to be a penalty. You could argue that they could do their job quicker, or they could be, you know, the process could be sped up via technology or whatever. You know, the moment there's one weighing bridge in Formula One, and if you think about the absurdity of having 24 cars in one weighing bridge,
I think they're running out of room now.
Well, they haven't got many more garages, but you have to consider that what you really should do is have, you know, maybe five or six of the damn things and just roll all the cars straight onto them. as they finished the race, and you could get through the field very, very quickly. So there are ways to speed up a lot of the things in Formula One if people just take the time to try and do that. I don't think anybody is ever considered, you know, how many times is the FIA really looking to speeding up the scrutineering process? I wouldn't imagine they've done that in a very long time.
Needs a bit of a think. Gavin's voicemail was obviously longer than what we've played. So I think what we can do is put the whole thing in the show notes.
Awesome.
So that you can listen to the whole thing and let us know what you think of. He tells the Grand Am example in a lot more detail than we can.
Where would one find such show notes?
That would be on sidepodcast.com.
And there's a thread for this very show.
Yeah. Next up, a voicemail from Simon the Backpacker.
Hi there, it's Simon the Backpacker here. Just wanted to say that I enjoyed the race very much today, even though there was no rain. Didn't need the rain to make it exciting. My comments on DRS are that it seems to created more opportunities for overtaking without actually making overtaking too easy. So I really like it. It's a shame that in the first two races we've had the chance for Lewis and Sebastian to go racing wheel to wheel, but because of bad starts from Lewis both times we haven't actually had the chance to see it, even though their cars are of comparable speeds. So it would be nice in one race to actually get to see them racing against each other. Other than that, great race, some really good scraps. Kobayashi versus Schumacher was good to see. Good to see Paul de Resta doing well as well. All in all, a good Sunday. We've been having parties around at our house. Lots of people over to watch BBC HD Formula One coverage, which is fantastic, apart from Eddie Jordan, of course. See you guys.
Paul de Resta has been doing very well. I am suitably bowled over by what that guy's doing in the Force India. I think he's actually out-driving what it's capable of doing.
Yeah, and he's doing better than Sutil at the moment. So
Sutil is a good benchmark for him. His first job is to beat him, and he's done that twice. A
couple of points in both the races, so you can't really ask for more than that,
can you?
Not
at all.
And of course, we do have the world's biggest Paul de Resta fan in our listener base.
Okay. Oh, is it time for Paul's performance report?
It is.
Wonderful. What has Stephen got to say this time?
Impressive.
And you can take that to the bank. Oh, there's more.
It's worth putting a little comment in along with it. After the last race, Paul said that he knew how to get more time out of the car over a race distance and how to improve his performance. And having finished behind his teammate in Australia, he managed to finish ahead of him today, which is a good step forward, especially considering the sort of wear and tear on a driver at this particular race with the high humidity, the high temperature. So considering everything that he had to deal with, I was really, really happy with his performance today.
And finally, we have some thoughts about the Malaysian Grand Prix from Lukey.
Hello, Lukey here. Malaysian Grand Prix then, was it worth getting up for? I think it was. I really enjoyed the race. I thought it was a great race with good result for the likes of Heidfeld and Jensen. It was really good seeing Heidfeld on the podium again. And Vettel won. Anyway, Rubens, you know, we need to do better, matey. We can get there. Stay positive. We'll get in the points, Rubens. Don't worry about it. I'm not worrying. I'm okay. And also Petrov, I hope he's okay because he literally took off. I mean, his car was off the floor. It was in midair, like a spaceship painted black and gold. But I hope he's okay. I'm sure he is, but that was quite scary.
Before we go, there's just time for our two other features we've introduced this year. Firstly, I need you to rate the race.
Rate the race? The pressure!
I know.
I'd forgotten.
Out of 10.
Okay. The race had everything, beginning to end. No chance, no let up. No chance to catch your breath. It was missing a big sell. It was missing an underdog.
It was missing the Perez factor.
Yeah, it was missing an underdog getting an unexpected point, like Covey on the podium or something to really
Heidfeld
sell it.
Heidfeld was up there.
Yeah, Heidfeld, that's good. He made a good comeback. I'm going to go for a 9.
Wow.
A big 9. Because really, what else can you ask for a race that has no rain and no safety cars? I cannot believe on a dry day in Malaysia, you can add it. It's a Tilk circuit. It's a Tilka circuit. Probably one of his best circuits. But for a Tilka circuit, I'm going to give that a 9.
Well, that is pretty impressive. I think I would go with 8.
Okay.
And so compared to Australia, that is up, but it's not quite perfect. Like I've said many times, I was a bit confused. It all got a bit much for me at some points, but I really enjoyed it. So that's good.
We're going for an 8.
Me.
And your driver of the day.
Now that is actually really quite tricky. And what I'm thinking is Button.
Okay.
Because if you compare whether or not Hamilton wore his own tyres out or if it was the car, we don't know. But Button seemed to have everything in control today. I was toying between Vettel and Button because Vettel was obviously so strong and out there at the front. He just nothing troubled him at all. But then that's what he does. Whereas Button, I think he can get himself into trouble, but I think he did really well today.
And the qualifying wasn't that great. He came back from a poor qualifying slot.
Yeah.
Do you know who I'll give the driver of the day to?
I don't. Tell me.
I'm going to give the driver of the day to Mark Webber.
What?
I know. Mark Webber, I'll tell you why. I will sell this to you.
Really?
Like I've never sold
anything
before.
You're going to have to try your best.
It is out there. I'll give you that. I believe he was the only driver in the whole grid to have no KERS whatsoever. So the guy was driving with one arm tied behind his back for the whole race, which would have been really frustrating. If you have a start...
I bet he's used to that, really.
If you have a... Fair point. But if you have a start like Webber had that start where you just get swamped, how frustrating must that be?
You've got one arm tied behind your back and you had a bad start.
And your teammate is leading the race. Mm. And you have to keep a very cool head not to ruin your day. If I was Mark Webber, I would have lost that on the first lap and I don't think anyone would have blamed me for doing so because it was just the worst possible scenario. And the guy fought and fought and fought. And you had Lewis losing his cool and getting frustrated, and it just seemed like Webber
Alonso lost his cool and got frustrated.
Lost his cool. Exactly, and you have bigger names than Webber who didn't have the cool just to keep going because Webber knows he's thinking of the whole season. He knows every point counts, and he's dropped ground to his teammate. But I think, given the equipment he had, that was a great drive.
We should point out that we are covering these in the blog. So if you want to tell us what you rate this race as and who your driver of the day is, there will be a post appearing on sidepodcast.com. So keep your eyes peeled and let us know what you think.
Check out the homepage.
Feedback. Although we did just do some voicemails, and that does count as feedback, this is the feedback section.
Righty-ho.
I don't know what the difference is, but I've made the difference in my mind.
That's good. I'm going to go with that. I'll go with whatever you say. It's your show.
First up, I had a message from Andy via the contact form, and he said, I was wondering what F1 music you're into and why. I have several songs that remind me of the great sport. These include The Chain by Fleetwood Mac, obviously, Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac, BBC's 1989 season review music, It's Not War by the Manic Street Preachers, BBC used this last year when displaying race results, All Fired Up by Pat Benatar, FIA 1988 season review music, Ivory Tower from Never Ending Story, old BBC grid music, Just Drive by Alistair Griffin, I think it was the 2008 BBC season review. Do you have any others and why?
Do I? Yes. Do you want to go first on this one?
Yes. I like the Backman Turner Overdrive.
Do you like the original or do you like the remix that ITV used on their Formula One coverage?
I like the remix that you use on our Formula One coverage.
It does sound very, very similar to the start of our podcast. Shush.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. And there was also that Lift Me Up song, which was
by
terrible.
Moby.
Yeah.
You like that one?
No, but it does remind me of F1.
I have to credit Formula One with a large selection of my modern music collection.
Really?
Yeah. I'll tell you why. Because there are the F1.com videos, you know,
the race edits.
Yeah, the race edits, and they always have some popular modern tune which I'd never heard of.
You know what song that stands out for me with in terms of that is Umbrella,
right? Because it rained. That was last year's Malaysia one,
there
wasn't it?
Gazing.
And I'll tell you something else, that was a Manic Street Preachers cover of Rihanna's Umbrella,
and you bought it straight away, didn't
and I
you?
Bought it straight away because like, this is the thing, I watch the race edits a lot because I really, really like them, and this year they are better because they're in HD. And that makes them even more fantastic, and therefore I will watch them more. And what I discovered was that I was equating certain moments in races to certain songs, and I didn't know any of the songs. They're all modern songs, and I knew none of them. And so I went through every single race edit, and I must have bought 12 of the 19 songs used in race edits. Actually, I think some race edits use even more than one, so I bought several. So a good proportion of my music collection is now built up from what I found on F1.com.
F1 is infiltrating every part of your life.
It's like my new radio, really. It's like, here are the cool tunes. And I'm trying to second guess and find out what tunes they'll use this year. And see whether I'm ahead of them or they're still ahead of me.
I think what we should do is we'll put Andy's suggestions in a page on the wiki. And then if other people have suggestions, we can put them in there too. And maybe we can make a whole Formula One mixtape.
Yes.
Or whatever the modern equivalent of a mixtape yes. is.
I'll tell you, I'll add one more to that for you, and that has got to be My Chemical Romance with Black Parade.
Oh, yes.
Which was the best thing that ITV ever did yeah. in all their years of broadcasting, was the
montage video at the end of their time.
So there's one more tune for your wiki. That's a great question. Is that Alistair?
Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
We've got another voicemail that is too long to go in the show in its entirety. And again, we will put that in the show notes. The full-length voicemail is from Jordan, and he has got some thoughts. Some of them are about the Australian Grand Prix, so they're a little bit out of date. But we'll pick out the salient points now, and you can listen to the whole thing in all its glory on sidepodcast.com.
Hey, Side Podcast. This is Jordan calling from all the way in Canada, British Columbia. Yeah, Australia, the first race of the season. Pretty interesting. It was all right. It was nice to see the cars back on track. Well, let's see if I can still get his name right. Pastro Maldonado for Williams, who I think is going to be the new kicking bag for F1 among for rookies. He just did not look very good out there, I must say. I thought I was looking back and seeing Yuji Ide driving. It was nice to see Vitaly racing and getting up on the podium. He was doing very well, and the Renault looks very good. So I wish Kubica was racing, because I would love to see what he'd be able to do. I think Nick Heidfeld, what's there to say about him, really? I mean, outpaced by your teammate. You finish a lap down, and your teammate finishes on the podium. And I think Heidfeld definitely has something to drive for before Kubica comes back to show other teams that he's still capable of doing well.
Now, obviously, Heidfeld has proved his worth now, and it looks like he just had a bad weekend in Australia. But the reason I left that in there is because I'm curious, if both Petrov and Heidfeld keep doing so well, how are they going to decide who to replace when Kubica comes back? Because you'd immediately think, well, Heidfeld has to take the step down because he's probably only got a little contract. But if he's doing super well, are they really going to want to chuck him out the team?
Well, the question then is, at what level does Kubica come back at? Because if you've been out of racing for a year and the tyres have completely changed in the time that you've been out and everybody else has become acquainted to those tyres, how far back will you be? Especially if you're coming back from an injury as severe as that one. And therefore, the question isn't... I mean, to answer your first question, Heidfeld will go because Vitaly has a two-year contract. So there's no question. That's not Yay. The problem. The problem is...
Sorry, Nick.
The problem is, at what point do you do that? Because you want to get Kubica in as quickly as possible, because, you know, if he's able to drive before the end of the season, it'd be great to see him coming back, and I'm sure Renault will want to see him come back. But if they suddenly find themselves in a reasonably good position in the championship, maybe they won't want to sacrifice that, and that depends on how well Vitaly is doing. You know, after the first race, he looked strong enough to be a team leader, and after this one, he doesn't.
Well, he doesn't look terrible. He had some issues and there was some flying incidents.
Yes.
But it wasn't as though it was the worst thing ever. And he had a great start. We know that. And he surprised Heidfeld by being where he was. So it wasn't the worst thing ever. So it does depend how it goes from here. And the other thing is, with Massa, it took him a while to get back into it. And he's never been the same, really. It's almost like being out of it for a while just sort of knocks your momentum, doesn't it? So will Kubica even have the same,
very good questions. It's far too early to be asking those questions, but it's
well, we don't even know if he's going to come back. It's just interesting to speculate.
It is. It's worth keeping an eye on. It's a nice problem for Renault to have. It's good to see that they've built a car that's as revolutionary as it is, and it's got pace, because the Williams is revolutionary too, and it hasn't got any pace at all. So I'm glad that they've, you know, they've made their front-facing exhausts work very well. I'm so glad that their season has been screwed by Kubica's accident. It's just a shame that it's the Lotus versus Lotus thing has sort of soured what Renault are at the moment. And I think going to the press conference, it was amusing that Button and Vettel didn't know what to call Lotus. They didn't have a clue what to
do. What do we call you now?
What is your name now? And so I think Vettel even called them Lotus, which is obviously completely incorrect, but fair enough. You know, if that's what he was told to call them, that's what he's gonna say. So it's a shame that is soured it. Otherwise, it's just very good to see how things have gone thus far, and I'm just happy for them for that reason.
Yeah, because I think it was Alison in the comments said that Side Podcast has been very Renault friendly in the past. Renault have been one of our favourite teams, and they still would be if it wasn't for this gold business.
Hi, this is the Boston Red Scott calling for the first time in a while. I just want to say thanks to all the people who made the trip to Boston. It was really nice for people to come and choose a place in the US for the first meetup, I think, in the US. And I had nothing to do with the organizing, which made my life much easier. So it's really nice to put a face behind some of the people that I chat to in the comments. Nice recovery drive from Mark Webber today. I'm not biased at all, being an Aussie. I know we have to show the winner coming across the line every time, but I kind of get frustrated that they don't use something like picture-in-picture to show the battles still going on during the race. And hopefully that everyone watching live could have actually seen that maybe on the BBC red button options and things like that. I guess one advantage that I've got watching the race when I, you know, get up in the morning is that I don't have to have all those multiple screens that everyone battles with, where you have one for the race, one for the comments, one for the timing, and all of those options. So that's it for me in Boston. I just want to say that the Red Sox aren't doing too well, so I might have to change my name again. See you in the comments.
You see, I still call him Scott in Italy, even though he's changed his name a couple of times since then. So
and that is now in Boston.
Yeah.
Yay for meetups, though. International meetups.
Yeah, we do like that kind of thing. There are a couple of posts on the way, I think. There are lots of pictures scattered around. But I think if you keep your eye on sidepodcast.com, we'll have full reports of everything that went down in Boston.
There were pictures from Sidepodcast's spiritual home, and that is the Bar of Cheers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that is the place where...
Everyone knows your name?
There is that, but there's also nondescript conversations that happen in small groups, and they cross over, but they don't relate. And that, there's lots of... I forget, there was a great example of some clip from Cheers where people were just having bizarre conversations, and it was exactly like following the live comments on Side Podcast. It's the spiritual home of Side Podcast, and those guys visited it, and they've got the photographer, and they've got the photographic evidence.
I did particularly like Scott's voicemail because it has a national anthem going on in the background.
Someone was watching Formula One.
It's always good to hear. We have one final voicemail which doesn't have a national anthem in the background.
Good morning, folks. It's Ian Kershaw calling from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Thoroughly enjoyed the podcast on the first race of the year, the Australian. Really do appreciate your insight and also the articles you did post-season. The song on the tyres, not bad either, although some of the rhyming was a bit forced, but nonetheless it made me smile. Just a quick thought regarding the Ferrari jack. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I saw that front jack swivel to the side towards the end of last year, if I'm not mistaken. But then again, it wouldn't be the first time if I was mistaken. Just wanted you to know that I thoroughly enjoy your banter, the commentary. The insights that you provided with some of your guests over the winter season were just... it's the first time I've had the privilege of listening to Side Podcast, and I'm going to be a very, very regular listener. That's Ian Kershaw in Calgary, Alberta, an expat who's been out here 21 years. All the best to you both. Bye now.
Housekeeping.
On the last show, we talked about donations and how we're always very grateful for any donations that come our way. And Paul emailed me to mention that we really didn't make it very obvious how to donate. Which, you know, that definitely doesn't sound like us not explaining things properly.
We rarely remember to plug anything properly.
No.
So that sounds right up our street. What didn't we do well?
Well, at the moment, the only way to donate is via PayPal, which, yes, you know, is a good way to do it on the internet. And the best way to do it is to go to sidepodcast.com, and down the right-hand side, a little way down the page, there
on
are
the
some
homepage.
Yellow buttons that give you options whether you want to do a recurring payment or a one-off. Now, that is the best way to get there. But Paul's email did make us think that actually we should have sidepodcast.com/donate.
Like sidepodcast.com/contact.
Yeah, which I'm still pushing for.
Right. That's not going to happen today. I'll just let you know. But that would work, I suppose. That would make more sense. Here's a donation page. Here's what we spend on your donation.
It's easier to describe than halfway down the page on the right-hand side, some yellow buttons.
Okay,
click them.
Fine. Thanks, Paul. That is actually a very good point. We'll try and sort that. I did want to mention one thing about the discussion on the last show. Pat did raise an interesting point we started the last show by saying, yay, we've got a HD TV, and doesn't it look fantastic that we've got this fantastic, brilliant television, and Formula One looks so beautiful on our television, and then ended the show by saying, we're so poor, give us your money, we can't afford to do this
anymore.
I don't
think we said that.
That's
we
basically
didn't
what we said,
say
isn't it?
We're so poor, and the two things are actually quite separate, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, they are very separate, and it's hard. I promised I will do a post explaining in depth how we allocate things like that, but it's worth reiterating that if you donate to Side Podcast, firstly, you make us very, 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 very happy. Secondly, you make a very big difference to what we can do with Side Podcast. And thirdly, we won't spend it on things like televisions and going on holiday, etc., etc., etc. The money that comes from donations doesn't go anywhere near stuff,
gadgets, and our toys.
Yes, it goes towards all of it. I mean, we are still a long way from having the donations cover the cost of hosting anyway. So we haven't ever got to the point when we have more donations than we have outgoing expenses for Side Podcast. If we did get to that point, then we would look into what we could do to make Side Podcast better. But buying a HD television came out of a whole separate area and doesn't affect anything. And that money would never have gone to hosting, because it's just a television so that we can watch TV and stuff, as opposed to keeping Side Podcast going. So I just wanted to, I will do an in-depth post. But if you were wavering on donating to us because we've got a better telly than you, which some people, you know, you might be thinking
it's,
then. That's
it's
a fair
enough,
comment. You know,
absolutely.
If you're suddenly thinking, well, I'm not watching Formula One in HD, so why am I paying them for a podcast? That's it doesn't work like that. And we will go into more depth. And it's quite a boring subject, so let's not talk about it on the show. But do keep an eye on sidepodcast.com on the homepage for more information on that this coming week.
Yes, but I'm going to be terribly British and turn the conversation away from money.
Give us some more money.
No.
It makes us happy.
Stop it. And actually, please, what I'm going to do is say, you need to hold your hands up and say you were wrong.
I'm holding my hand up and I'm going to say I was wrong.
Now, I can't,
why?
I can't remember which show it was on. It was quite a while ago, I think. You said that Autosport, that lovely website with all the news and stuff, they managed to get
my second home.
They managed to get 5 stories out of 1 press release. That is what you said.
I know what this is. I'm in trouble for that, aren't I?
Now,
that
someone.
Was, that, I'll tell you what show it was on, firstly. That was on. We were talking to Manipe, and we were talking about the Infinity Red Bull story, non-story.
Embargo thing.
That's the one. That's right. What that was about. Yep. And I said, Autosport typically do the Autosport thing where they've got 1 press release, and out of that comes 3 or 4 stories, and what a weird way to go about journalism.
Yeah. And I mean, it does happen that multiple stories come out of single little pieces of information. But in this particular case, someone from the Haymarket Enterprise was listening and pointed out that actually they didn't get 5 stories out of a press release. They had a man on the ground talking to Infinity and beyond.
Ouch.
And so we were wrong.
I was.
You were wrong.
I
didn't say anything.
You can. You're right in that. I know what I was trying to say, which is you get a press release and you print the press release and you get a couple of stories out of it. They do that very well, and that was my intended target, and I picked completely the wrong target because they were one of the only people
in this
who
one
sent
case,
anyone. Anyone to this, they were the only people, yeah, one of the only people who actually stuck by the embargo, one of the only people who actually sent somebody there, one of the only people who reported it properly. I definitely got my wires crossed in that show, and I absolutely, totally, and utterly apologise. I've been found out, which is fair enough. Put my hands up, I'm rubbish. And so sorry, I'll try not to do that again.
Sorry, Autosport, we do love you, really. I think that about wraps up our podcast for today. Malaysia is over and done with. It's all about turning our attention to China now, which is back-to-back racing. You know what I find weird is that
the press releases, the press quotes have already come out already for China.
What?
Leave have
me
you
alone.
Not seen them?
Leave me alone. I find it weird that we're going to be 3 races into the season and we've had this back-to-back already. And then after that, there's like a 3-week break. Why do we need a break so early? Couldn't you have just put the China one in there and do it normally, whatever.
It reduces the expenses for those travelling.
Yeah.
It does make sense. In theory, you could probably argue the first 2 should be back-to-back if they could physically do it and if we could physically cope with it all. But then you're out of Europe for the smallest amount of time.
Yeah.
It does
save
money.
It's another early start as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We can cope, though. We'll just skip practice again.
We're going to leave you with a song. Now,
what?
Relax. I'm not singing it.
Okay.
That's the first most important thing to say.
Don't turn off yet.
This came in from Simon, who actually I think would prefer to be called Lil Sai, but I can't
Lil Sai?
I can't actually say it very well. I'm not down with the kids.
Lil Si? How do you say? I don't know.
Lil Si. Hi, Christine. Long time side podcast listener. Love the show. So I thought I'd contribute with my Team Lotus version of Wiz Khalifa's Black and Yellow. Enjoy, Lil Si. Now, I read this
and say that title again. Wiz what?
The song is called Black and Yellow.
Right.
And the artist is called Wiz Khalifa. Wiz is a weird
This
name
is what he's calling himself? I don't understand.
No. This is an actual artist. Now,
oh, this isn't Hit Simon's song?
No, listen to me. Shush.
Lil Si.
Lil Si. When I read this, I didn't know what that meant.
I don't know what it means now.
I listened to this to what Simon sent over, which we'll play you momentarily. And I thought, oh, that sounds fun, but I don't know what it is. Now on our lovely HDTV, I was watching some music channel video things and the actual song came on. I was like, oh, this is a real song. Down with the Kids and all that. It's like in the charts, or it's going to be in the charts soon.
What is this? Okay, so it's a cover of a popular tune.
It's a Formula One.
And the original tune is called what?
Black and Yellow.
By?
Wiz Khalifa.
That's a person's name.
What part of this don't you understand?
I've never heard of anyone called... Okay, fine.
So we'll play you out with Lil Si's version of Black and Yellow.
I hope it's awesome after all this.
Yeah. That's how we do it. 2011. Si Podcast. Ain't a rapper, but let's do it. Yeah, you know what it is. It's a Team Lotus name thing, it's pretty big. Genie Capital, that's nothing. We got Air Asia, now that's funding. Got a midfield dream, taking it into Q3. We go green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow. In your slipstream, representing Lotus team. I mean green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow. Tony Fernandez, you are the main. Renault, we liked you, so why the change? You put our name upon your car. We're gonna catch you, not very far. All these lawsuits, you know they're boring. When your back is turned, you will be scoring. And we got the pedal to the metal, trying to get our name. But you gotta know we will not settle. We're gonna crown champion and then we'll revel. Just seen the stairs to the podium and the next level. Yeah, we're truly Cobra Line and we gon' flown it. We're gonna drive past you. Curse on it. Yeah, you know what it is. It's a Team Lotus name thing, it's pretty big. Genie Capital, that's nothing. We got Air Asia, now that's funding. Got a midfield dream, taking it into Q3. We go green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow. In your slipstream, representing Lotus team. I mean green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow.